Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, George Galloway's Mother of All Talk Shows, Radio Havana, Cuba, and France 24. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. Chinese President Xi Jinping met with French President Macron, urging that they work together to fend off a new Cold War. The United Nations is raising alarm about the military use of artificial intelligence in LAWS, or Lethal Autonomous Weapon Systems. Student protest against the war on Palestine has spread to Britain, with 10 encampments including Oxford and Cambridge. NHK Japan.
Chinese President Xi Jinping has told his French counterpart Emmanuel Macron that their countries should work together to fend off a new Cold War. France is the opening leg of Xi's first trip to Europe in 5 years. This is the 60th anniversary of diplomatic ties between China and France.
In the current chaotic situation of this century, China and France must maintain independence, jointly prevent a new Cold War or confrontation between camps, insist on mutual understanding, and jointly promote harmonious coexistence in a colorful world.
Xi is apparently urging France to strengthen the relationship amid confrontation with the United States. Macron says that both countries will be able to play a useful role in ensuring global stability. The leaders also discussed the Russian invasion of Ukraine.
We welcome the commitments of the Chinese authorities to refrain from selling any weapons or aid to Moscow and to strictly control the export of dual-use goods.
Xi said China has been playing a role in the efforts to bring peace to Ukraine instead of being an onlooker. The two leaders also agreed to call for a worldwide truce during the upcoming Paris Summer Olympics. As Xi tried to strengthen ties, Washington and Manila aimed to boost bilateral cooperation by staging a live-fire military exercise. It came amid escalating tensions between the Philippines and Beijing over the South China Sea. The joint exercise happened Monday on the Ilocos Norte province coast in northern Philippines that faces the sea near Taiwan. Personnel fired anti-tank javelin missiles and howitzers at a target about 1 kilometer from the coastline. They also fired machine guns to prepare for preventing enemy troops from landing. The head of the UN Office for Disarmament Affairs is raising the alarm about the threat posed by military applications of artificial intelligence. The official said there is an urgent need for discussions about international regulations. Nakamitsu Izumi told NHK she feels a sense of crisis.
I'm concerned that in the future, AI weapons technology will bring about a significant change in the ways in which wars are conducted and fought.
There is a particular concern about AI use in lethal autonomous weapon systems, or LAWs. Such systems select and attack targets without human instructions. Last year, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called on member states to adopt a legally binding framework for laws by 2026, as no international rules currently govern them.
Now, the wave of student protests against Israel's assaults on the Gaza Strip have spread to Britain. Students from at least 10 British universities, including Oxford and Cambridge, have now joined demonstrations similar to those on U.S. campuses. at Cambridge University, an encampment of nearly 50 tents has been set up by students and staff. The protesters are demanding that the university cut ties with companies that supply arms to Israel. The students say the protests will continue until the university listens to their demands.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan. On shortwave, they are heard at 10 p.m. at 11735 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp and most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. Next, the mother of all talk shows with George Galloway. Chris Hedges, American journalist, author, commentator, and Presbyterian minister, compares the current student unrest with the uprisings in the 1960s. He talks about the media portrayal of protesters as being anti-Semitic and trained by so-called outside agitators. He talks about the militarized police threats and compares Biden and Trump's remarks about who the students are and what should be done to them. The mother of all talk shows.
In a sane America, he'd be pretty near the president's desk at the White House. At least he'd be at Foggy Bottom as the Secretary of State. Chris Hedges, welcome. You know, it's important. We always accuse the other side of living in a bubble, and they do. But it's important we don't live in a bubble either, isn't it? I looked back at a documentary around the killings of four students in America at the Kent State University in 1970, the height of the anti-Vietnam War campaign. And they did a lot of vox pops in the vicinity of the campus, the neighbors of the students, the parents of many of the students at that university, who invariably said to the camera that the troopers should have shot more of them. The troopers should have wiped out the protesters at Kent State. I mean, blood-curdling it was. What's the attitude, in your view, in middle America to us, grotesque spectacle of soldiers, for that's what many of them were, with high-powered rifles and armor, beating the hell out of elderly professors and young kids sitting in at their own university over the last couple of weeks?
Well, we've got to look at how the media portrays it. And I'm including the quote unquote liberal media, the New York Times, my former employer, MSNBC. So they've completely distorted the narrative. These groups are painted not as groups that attempt to protest the genocide, but as groups that are threatening Jews and Jewish students and calling for the destruction of Israel. When the police were green-lighted to go in, sometimes with guns drawn, on students at Columbia, the excuse was that these groups were being led by infiltrators and outside agitators. Joe Biden has called them hate groups. Chuck Schumer, senator from New York, head of the Democratic Senate Majority Leader, has called them terrorists, has said that they were terrorists. So, and the media has just amplified that caricature of the students. And that was also true, of course, during the war in Vietnam. So the propaganda engine is fierce. It is unrelenting in terms of demonizing. There's just one story, just as, you know, we get a constant replay of October 7th, with all sorts of lies, beheaded babies and systematic rape, all of which is not true, to justify the genocide, we get an assault of lies on a daily basis that mischaracterize the students, what they're doing, what they stand for. I mean, I was just up at Columbia, and I've spent a lot of time with the Princeton encampment. I live in Princeton. About 40%, I'm estimating, of these protesters are Jewish. And in fact, the worst kinds of assaults. The fear, when we talk about fear on campuses, felt by non-Zionist Jews from their Zionist counterparts. Remember, a lot of these campuses like Columbia have current or former IDF soldiers as students. And we had students attacked with skunk spray violently by three former IDF soldiers on the steps of Low Library at Columbia in January. But it is such a massive distortion of the truth that, of course, these people in Middle America who unfortunately believe what they're told are whipped up into a kind of a hatred and a kind of support for this militarized occupation. I mean, we've had universities where snipers have been deployed on the roofs. We had when the NYPD went in to the second story window and this machine, I don't know what it's called, but a ramp that went up to the window, they had their guns drawn. In fact, they fired a gun. They used smoke grenades. I mean, the students were beaten. When several went to the hospital, one was beaten unconscious. It's just staggering. But you're right. And that comes from the complicity of the press in essentially not only justifying the genocide, but justifying armed assault against nonviolent protesters who are opposing the genocide.
You ever lose faith, Chris?
No, I come out of Calvin. I have a very dark view of human nature. I lose faith when people... I've spent a lot of time actually writing a very long piece, probably have spent 12 hours interviewing student activists, including students at Princeton who have gone on a hunger strike. And you can't sit with them and lose faith. They're sacrificing their careers, their education. It's hard to get into these schools like Princeton and Columbia. Their parents are not happy. For undergraduates, I mean, they said, you know, we, at least the graduate students still have a degree. If we're expelled, we don't even have a college degree. And when you spend time with them, you don't lose faith. They and the Yemenis are the two groups that have finally stood up in a meaningful way, against severe repression and against a legitimate fear that their academic careers will be completely sabotaged.
There's no point in wasting words on Joe Biden. I think we're beyond that. But what did you make of Trump's unhinged speech yesterday, in which he appeared to threaten the deportation of Americans if they oppose Israel? And anyone who tries to destroy Israel, he said, will be destroyed by us. He seemed to be threatening, I don't know, a kind of mass capital punishment in America for Israel's enemies. It's like a Dutch auction, isn't it? Where everyone competes to see who can be the most slavish, the most vile supporters of the worst acts since the Second World War.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, we do have to take Trump's rhetoric with a grain of salt. He can rhetorically go to places that, in fact, he doesn't ultimately go. I mean, the tragedy of this current presidential election is that we, as Americans, are offered a choice between a candidate who is actively pursuing genocide and a candidate who will probably snuff out what is left of our very anemic democracy. I don't consider that much of a moral choice. There's very little daylight, ultimately, between Trump and Biden. For a Palestinian, there's no daylight. There would be no difference whether Trump was in the White House or Biden. And internally, there's very little daylight, given the draconian use of force that has been carried out in campuses across this country. I mean, when I was up at Columbia the other day, that campus is on complete lockdown. It's completely surrounded, not only surrounded by police and private security, but occupied internally by New York City police. No student can go into that campus unless they live in a residence hall on the inside of campus. There are no classes. They can't go to labs. They can't go to the library. It's a Potemkin university. It doesn't really exist anymore. I don't think that Trump, Biden, I don't think there'd be much difference in terms of the repression that has been meted out on these university campuses. I mean, the next step would be perhaps like Kent State, shooting protesters, shooting demonstrators. But we've walked all the way up to that line.
Chris Hedges, political commentator, journalist, writer, and host of the Chris Hedges Report.
That interview with Chris Hedges was by George Galloway from his online program called The Mother of All Talk Shows, available on YouTube and most podcast sites. George was recently returned to the British Parliament. Chris Hedges has regular podcasts available at most podcast sites. On to Radio Havana, Cuba. Evergreen College in Olympia, Washington agreed to call for a ceasefire and begin divestment from companies supplying weapons. Rachel Corey was a graduate of Evergreen and was crushed to death by an Israeli military bulldozer in Rafah in 2003. Javier Milei, president of Argentina, has censored South American news source Telesur. The Israeli government has blocked media network Al Jazeera from the country. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The father of pro-Palestinian American activists who was mercilessly killed by the Israeli regime forces in the southern Gaza city of Rafah in 2003 has praised a move by his late daughter's college to agree to the academic demonstrators' demands regarding divestment from the occupying entity in support of Palestinians. Evergreen State College administrators in Olympia, Washington, and pro-Palestine student protesters reached an agreement on Tuesday, with the former vowing to publicly call for a ceasefire in Gaza and work towards divesting from, quote, companies that profit from gross human rights violations and/or the occupation of Palestinian territories. The move made the university the first across the United States to completely divest from Israel following widespread rallies by students and academics over the past couple of weeks in solidarity with Palestinians and in condemnation of Israel's months-long genocidal war on Gaza. Evergreen State College is the alma mater of the U.S. activist Rachel Corrie, who lost his life in 2003 when an Israeli armored bulldozer crushed her as she was trying to prevent the demolition of her Palestinian family home in Rafah. Quote, I'm proud of the students of Evergreen for the action that they took and the way they managed to get these concerns across, Corrie's father, Craig Corrie, said. I'm proud of the faculty that worked with them and the administration they negotiated with that these concerns should be acknowledged. Since her death, which happened at the height of the second Intifada uprising, the 23-year-old activist has been remembered as an icon for the Palestinian struggle against Israel's decades-long occupation. After the government of Argentinian President Javier Milei eliminated the signal of a multi-platform information Telesur from the open digital grid in Argentina, many personalities have shown their support for Telesur. The sectoral vice president of Communications, Culture and Tourism of Venezuela, Freddy Nunas, shared the statement broadcast by Telesur denouncing the act and highlighted that media censorship takes over Argentina. A statement released by Telesur in Caracas. The media censorship directed against Telesur in Argentina represents a serious attack on the right to information by limiting access to dissident voices, restricting plurality of information, undermining the possibility of holding informed opinions, and actively participating in public debate. In a scenario where the diversity of opinions and the free circulation of ideas are fundamental for the functioning of a democratic society. At the human cost of the chainsaw that cut off retirements and pensions, reduced public salaries, increased the poverty of millions of Argentinians, and that threatens to extinguish through deeds the well-known Argentinian public educational system, now there is a deafening blast against freedom of expression and the plurality of voices, which paves a worrying setback on the path towards a society that builds its own criteria and sovereign thought. Israeli satellite and cable television providers suspended broadcasts of Al Jazeera after the government decision to shut down the network's operations in Israel for as long as the war on Gaza continues. Benjamin Netanyahu's cabinet made the decision on the grounds the television network, in their estimation, threatens national security. The network is funded by the Qatari government and has been critical of Israel's military operation in Gaza, from where it has reported around the clock throughout the war. Quote, the incitement channel, Al Jazeera, will be closed in Israel, Netanyahu posted on social media following the unanimous cabinet vote. Quote, Al Jazeera Media Network strongly condemns and denounces this criminal act that violates the human rights and basic right to access of information, the network said in a statement. The United Nations Human Rights Office also criticized the closure, urging the Israeli government to overturn the ban, citing the importance of free and independent media. We regret cabinet decision to close Al Jazeera in Israel. A free and independent media is essential to ensuring transparency and accountability, now even more so given tight restrictions on reporting from Gaza. Freedom of expression is a key human right. We urge government to overturn the ban. Israel's parliament last month ratified a law allowing the temporary closure in Israel of foreign broadcasters considered to be a threat to national security.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu. There's no podcast, however. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this listener-funded program, you could write to me at Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. My online support information is available at outfarpress.com. Your donations are essential for the weekly production and distribution of this show. We will conclude with France 24. Two press reviews, one on campus protest in Europe and one on a new ban on social media for youth under 13 in the UK. Then new heat records across the globe have been reported by the European Union's Global Observation Program, Copernicus. France 24.
You're starting with campus protests really spreading across Europe now.
Yeah, we've heard a lot about pro-Palestinian protests at universities here in France, as well in the US. They've really started to heat up across Europe now, including the Netherlands. This is the front page of the country's biggest newspaper, The Telegraph. Anarchy in Amsterdam, the headline. Protests turned violent with police breaking up demonstrations last night and beating some protesters in Amsterdam, saying that the action was necessary to restore order. Over 100 were arrested there. This is El País in Spain, where dozens of students have spent over a week at pro-Palestinian encampments on the University of Valencia campus. This piece reports that Madrid's governor, Isabel de Ayuso, is pushing for a ban on a pro-Palestinian encampment in the capital. The Andalusian government, where the protests have mostly took place, have distanced themselves from that position, stating that they're extremely respectful of the right to protest, a right which is a fundamental right to citizens. I'll cross the pond now to the US and give you the Los Angeles Times. They report that over 100 people were arrested between UCLA and San Diego. UCLA Police Chief John Thomas has come under increased pressure for his handling of the situation. He's been accused of excessive violence. I'll finish by showing you the Washington Post. They report that conservative judges say they'll boycott Columbia University students. In a letter addressed to the president of the university, 13 judges nominated by Donald Trump said Columbia has become ground zero for anti-Semitism. They're also threatening to not hire law clerks who attend Columbia University or its law school.
Well, Leo, let's move now to the United Kingdom, where tough new social media laws are set to be introduced.
Yes, on the front page of The Times this morning, social media apps including TikTok and Instagram will be told to tame aggressive algorithms pushing harmful content to children under new rules. It's also on the front page of The Telegraph this morning as well, reporting that children will have to show ID to use social media. Tough new age checks were unveiled by regulator Ofcom today, which would come into force in the second half of next year. Social media firms will be required to introduce robust checks, including the use of photo ID, such as passports, to identify children using their sites and protect them from harm online. Platforms such as Facebook and Instagram, who have a minimum age of 13, will be expected to use the checks to enforce those age limits. The move could result in millions of children being removed from social media sites, as Ofcom research suggests that as many as 51% of those aged between 3 and 12 use at least one social media app at home. The Guardian reports that tech companies that fail to comply with the regulations will face fines of up to 10% of their global turnover. So for a company such as Meta, for example, that would be £11 billion. Michelle Donlan, the Secretary of State for Technology, said the government would no longer tolerate a wild west where children are force-fed violence, pornography, abuse and harmful content on social media.
Record-breaking floods in Brazil, Kenya and Tanzania, droughts in Botswana and Colombia, and unprecedented heatwaves in Southeast Asia have all highlighted what scientists have long been warning. With climate change comes more extreme weather events. And now, more records have been broken. April was the hottest on record and the 11th consecutive month to break its own heat record, according to the EU's climate change agency Copernicus. The latest data brings the average for the last 12 months to 1.61 degrees Celsius, higher than the 1.5 degree goal that countries agreed to under the Paris Agreement to avoid disastrous consequences of warming. April also marked 13 months of high sea surface temperatures, which according to the IUCN can cause coral bleaching, impact marine ecosystems and species, and threaten food security. It's also a direct threat to the planet, which needs oceans to absorb greenhouse gases. While the El Niño phenomenon is also a factor in warming surface waters, scientists are concerned that they have retained heat after it's waned. While not all scientists see eye to eye on whether the Paris Agreement can realistically be met, they are overwhelmingly urging governments to cut CO2 emissions faster to limit damage.
Those press reviews and report were from France 24. France 24 may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You will have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 28th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. While I am recuperating from spinal injury, I am staying in a house that is connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.